Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello and welcome to The Ball Bags, a weekly podcast breaking down all the news from the United Rugby Championship, the NFL, the English Premier League, the NBA, and the wide world of sport. Hello and thank you very much for tuning into episode 1.13 of The Ball Bags podcast on lucky number 13. So we've a lot to get through this week. Usual permanent fixtures, player of the week. Have you seen this? I'm going to take you first up and we're going to have a quick look at, I suppose, contracts in sport. And specifically some of the worst managed ones. The bottom feeder athlete, or the BFA, is going to have a look on championship windows. And like a scorned lover, the coach is going to have a deep dive into the golden balloon, the Ballon d'Or. But without much further ado, I'm delighted to be joined by the bottom feeder athlete and the coach. How are we, gents?
What's the crack, lad? How are you?
Oh, good. Nice to all be around the table on a Tuesday.
You sound like Brian Carter.
Look, it's good when the winter football's back, isn't it? Nearly, you know, every other night there's a game now, nearly the winter series of football. Yeah.
Flashback to
last
year.
There's Primal tonight, tomorrow and Thursday,
yeah,
isn't there?
And not...
I didn't realise how much was on.
Yeah, and then we've got the Women's Internationals playing this evening as well. For those of you listening to us tomorrow, it's an important fixture of this Tuesday evening against Georgia. It's absolutely lashing rain here in South County Dublin, and they may have to go out in their swimming trunks. Not like that. I don't mean like that. I mean
like Dublin as well. Like, he lets everyone know he's not from the north side. Yeah. South County Dublin.
I just said it's the most important. The most important thing he has. But look,
my Floridian friends are not going to visit me in North County Dublin. That's
yeah. I think they all think we live in Dublin if they're acting like Americans. Anyway, kick things off the road in partnership with our affiliate, The Athletic. Plenty of Black Friday deals still going, Cyber Monday deals still going. But look, click the link in the description, get yourself a free month, and read the best sports journalism there is out there. Player of the weekend, gents, who had we picked?
I went with, because I'll say mine first because he's probably not going to win it, but Jamie Vardy. Thought he was back to his best this weekend. We don't know how long, obviously, he's got left in terms of the top end. He's obviously reaching the upper echelons of his career, but I think he came out with 2 goals and an assist on the weekend, so, which was very, very good.
In difficult conditions.
Jamie Vardy's diet defies modern medicine. Have you seen?
You might have to deep dive into that 1 week, I think.
Yeah,
extraordinary.
It's worth a pod on its own, I think, just purely on a caffeine. Yeah. Like, what a man.
Yeah, I feel like he's one of those people that if we were still in the, do you remember the Wednesday club, Sunday club type culture, he would probably thrive.
I think that's why he spent so long in the non-league.
Yeah, I think
that's probably true.
He probably would have been as good as
if
George Best.
He toned down what he was.
He's probably that player. If George Best was to play in this current era, that's probably who you're looking at. That ilk.
Yeah, fair, fair. You know, look, he definitely would have mentioned. It was actually a brilliant game. I don't know if you can call it a match of day two. Difficult to see with the snow, quite heavy in patches, and the ball didn't look yellow, is what I would say. I think an orange ball, a third ball is needed for the snowing conditions. I'll jump in. Mine was Leonard Fournette, 4 touchdowns in a must-win game for the Buccaneers. It was, I think it's his first 100-yard game as well for the Buccaneers since moving from Jacksonville, obviously. But yeah, just an immense performance for him, and what was a bit of a classic game, to be fair, as well. Yourself, Pat and Peter Atley?
I had Mac Jones, and it was purely because he was the best of a bad bunch of quarterbacks on the weekend, really. Fair. He had the highest passer rating of any QB on Sunday. And like, some of the performances were really bad. Like,
yeah, it was a strange weekend in sports, to be fair. A lot of fixtures.
He actually missed some throws, like he missed some gimmies as well. Like, it could have been a lot better for him. So I think it just kind of says where the last kind of 2 to 3 weekends of NFL play has been really bad.
Yeah, elite level running backs dropping like flies as well. So it's definitely a strange one. Any other honorable mentions?
No.
Fair.
Look, it wasn't one of those weekends where you're gonna go, someone put their hand up to be counted here. They were going, you know, I need to get on that list of, you know, features on this show. So, no.
If we took it on the whole week, I'd like to just say Sancho had a great week.
Here we go.
Moving swiftly on. If we had to pick one, gents, and narrow it down, do we have a selection?
I go with Fournette.
Happy with Fournette?
Yeah, it's hard to argue with 4 touchdowns.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, well look, moving on, main segment. Agree or disagree? So gents, my question, and to open the discussion, Christian McCaffrey, obviously, as NFL fans be aware, has been ruled out for the remainder of the season. His latest IR stint makes the 4th time in 2 years he's been landed on the inactive list. In 2 years since he signed the whopping $64 million contract, he's played just 10 games. Quick maths, obviously, that's a 6.4 million per game to date with only 2 years left on the contract. This obviously sent me down a rabbit hole, because that's how my brain works, and it got me thinking, what is the most costly contract in sports history? And I'll open this up with, I will finish with the worst one ever. So gents, worst contract in sports history.
Bottom feeder, go ahead.
So I have two nice ones here. The first one, and I think he's a bit of a cult hero in the NFL. Like, he's like one of the original, has a hose, can't hit a barn door, Jay Cutler. So
just know Jay, he's a Cutler, door in Chicago though.
And yeah, but like, look, we won't get into it. Jay Cutler signed a $126 million deal back in 2014, and subsequently his play went off a cliff. Now, it was already hanging on a cliff, and for anyone that doesn't know who Jay Cutler is, he's married to one of those mad famous housewives in America,
also who's
subsequently trying to take all of his money now.
He's also a famous bodybuilder as well, namesake, but we digress.
Yeah, so Cutler had a pretty bad one. That set Chicago back a while. And they're still kind of still think they're going to be set back for another while, to be honest.
Struggling. It's kind of a historic thing with that franchise though. They've never, even like, if you look at that great 85 Chicago Bears that did win the Super Bowl, like, there always was questions over Jim McMahon. I know he's a bit of a maverick and a bit of a wild character, and he kind of got elevated to that cult status, but there always would be question marks about his kind of playing ability, style of play, and he was very hit and miss.
The coach. Other one is,
go on bottom feeder, finish it out.
The second one is Allen Houston, who signed $100 million back into just after 1999 playoffs. So $100 million back then is pretty nuts, and knee injuries then really set him back with the Knicks. So those are two interesting ones, just because the $100 million from the year 2000 is pretty significant.
Throw a little ad hoc one in there quickly. Kim Kylestrom signed with a broken back. Banter FC. Coach.
Yes, sir.
Do you have any?
So, yeah, I've got a couple. One that stands out is Joakim Noah at the New York Knicks. Signed a 4-year contract, $72 million, that stretched through to 2022. So he's still contracted there as such. He's a two-time All-Star, but he began a sharp decline in 2016, and missed. He had only missed 53 games up until this point. Then signs the new deal, and then injuries and a 20-game suspension for breaking the anti-drug policy. He went on to just appear 53 times after that, and then October 2018, the team waived the. And stretch his remaining contract over 3 years, so until the end, he'll be getting paid until the end of the 2022 season, and they will pay him $6.4 million annually not to play. But I have absolutely no passion in that one, so I suppose the one that I've picked out for me that I like, that I went into a rabbit hole, because I don't know if you've noticed, it's very, very hard to find out how much an Australian A-League player gets paid. But if you have seen the reports during the week, Daniel Sturridge came on as a sub last weekend for his new team, Perth Glory. And then this weekend, sorry, that was 2 weekends ago, the weekend just gone, he took a 4-hour journey, flight, got off the other end to play the game, and has pulled up a cramp throughout the flight. So said he couldn't play and pulled himself from the squad list. So I'm just wondering and foreseeing any issues now, and I have a feeling it's going to be a terrible, terrible investment for Perth Glory. I'd imagine he's on a lot of money for the A-League. Particularly, like, he's a player that hasn't played in a year and a half. I know he's trained with Real Mallorca, but
is he not worth more before he even steps on the field for a side like Perth Glory? And I'm only thinking out loud, is like, Perth is AFL country, and every other sport in Australia struggles to make it there. You look at the Western Force, there's been numerous NRL expansions. It's just a hard place to get. It's so isolated from the rest of Australia. Is the potential of bringing in fans from the greater Western Australian area a bigger sell for Perth than Enton Sturridge could ever do on the field for them?
Yeah, I just don't. If this is a means to go on, like, I'm not sure where they're gonna, are they gonna pull fans in the gate? Like, I get the whole, like, if you flip that and look at, say, jersey sales, I would say, I don't know if jersey sales are a massive thing in Australia. I don't think they are, because you don't see that many. You'll see MLS float jerseys floating around Dublin and wherever, but I don't recollect ever seeing one in Ireland of the A-League. But in fact, my friend has a Robbie Fowler one there, I say that. But if this is a means to go on,
people, friends,
people aren't gonna go and visit, are they? They're not gonna go down to Perth and watch Sturridge play when he's claiming he's got cramp, you know, the morning of.
Yeah, fair.
Or whatever.
Fair.
But
can I ask a daft question? What is Daniel Sturridge's career earnings?
Do you know the answer?
Out of curiosity. No. I'm just wondering, like, is Daniel Sturridge's net worth almost the same as the football team he's currently playing for?
I mean,
you're not bigger than a club, but he actually could be bigger than this club.
Yeah, just on a quick search there, they're estimating his net worth at £14.6 million. So you're probably not far off, yeah. Also, I don't think it was. I genuinely feel for the lad, because he's done well wherever he's gone in England. He just hasn't done it for any consistent period of time.
I don't think he dropped quick enough, if that makes sense. As in, he was with Liverpool, he was with Chelsea, but he was always kind of an off the bench player. I think he was probably better at West Brom, whereas if he dropped sooner to a mid-table side, probably would have had a more storied career, would have developed a little bit more.
I did read Steven Gerrard's book, and he pretty much said, without saying, that was all in his head, that he had to put him for a chat before a United game in Old Trafford. Remember when Stevie G was wearing white, kissed the camera, all that sort of stuff. He had to pull Sturridge before that. Sturridge wasn't going to play, and I pulled out of the squad. And can't remember who was manager at the time. Asked Steven Gerrard to go and have a word with him and got him to play or whatever. So, which tells me, he's like, well, if he could play, why was he pulling out of the squad?
Soft McGray matter, I think.
Yeah, like I do feel sorry for him. There probably is a little bit of a mental thing there, but yeah, we digress. I just think, I don't know if it's going to be, it's worth just keeping an eye on it and seeing how it progresses and what happens next. Don't know how long he's got. I don't know how long the contract even is. It's very hard to find any information on the A-League.
Yeah, there's reasons for that. Any other ones? And before I tell you what is officially the worst contract in sports history.
Oh, he knows. Just thinking of honourable mentions. Honourable mentions. Isn't there
Odell's contract didn't look great there now.
Doesn't look great. You look at someone like maybe Ricky Williams as well. Throwback to Miami Dolphins. Kind of what happened to him.
Oh, he smoked a lot of that, didn't he? Yeah. Like every cent.
Don't they call the free agency day Bobby Bonilla Day?
That's the contract I was going to get to.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. All right, so.
Oh, he's ruined it.
Yeah, I didn't mean that. Hasn't really. Right, I'll read it out to you anyway. So, obviously, 1st of July, gents, is the cultural phenomenon known as Happy Bobby Bonilla Day. So, Bobby Bonilla was a Major League Baseball player with the New York Mets. Plenty of New York hate in this. I don't know if that says a lot about New York sports. For reference, in 1991, he signed a $20 million contract, and at the time, that made him the highest paid player in Major League Baseball. So, for reference, he was a great player, whatever. Fast forward on to the year 2000, he'd extended that contract in 1996, and he was aging at this point, so the Mets wanted to buy out his contract. I think he had a year, maybe 2 years left. The total value of that contract was $5.9 million. But instead of making a count against the cap, Bobby Bonilla's agent somehow managed to get the Mets to agree to effectively paying in installments over 25 years, starting in 2011. So the installments were made up of the remaining $5.9 million plus an 8% annual interest rate starting in 2001, which would have made it was $12.7 million in 2001. But effectively between 2011 and 2035, Bobby Bonilla gets $1.19 million every 1st of July, which means he will have received a total of $298 million on the 1st of July, 2035, 34 years since he last swung a bat. And that, gents, is the worst and greatest contract in professional sports history.
I would like to say, Bobby, you're a bit of a fucking idiot as well, because, like, it's like winning the EuroMillions. You know, if you win the EuroMillions, like, you get the option of, right, here's $156 million now, or you can get it in installments. Like, what idiot. Like, I want to be able to roll around a big bed of money, like, all of it at the same time.
You're talking about someone who was a multimillionaire at the very end of his career. He set himself up for life.
He's 58 now. Give it to me in one.
He's 58 and he still has another 14
stupid,
years of
God.
1 million payouts every 1st of July.
It's some pension scheme.
Like, what if he spends more than he takes in? Like, he's fucked. Like, Bobby has to be frugal with that. Like,
he's 58, though. I mean, it's very hard to blow through $1 million a year unless you're acting like see you next Tuesday. Like, so.
Do you think it's hard to blow? Do you reckon how quickly you blow through $1 million a year?
I think at 58, you should be set up when you look at the money he's made over his career lifespan. Plus, there's also the massive caveat that the Mets have been a disaster since. And I think it wasn't the summer just gone, but I think July 2020, he was the highest paid player on the payroll because they were going through a massive rebuild. So imagine not playing for a franchise for 20 years.
Did they still utilize
still being
him?
The highest paid player? No.
But did they utilize him for a club, I don't know, visiting the sick children or anything?
Nothing. His contract effectively ended in July 2000. But yeah, it's a phenomenal bit of business. He's turned $5.9 million to $29.8 million.
What year did he agree to it?
2000. They let him go. He played another year at, I think, the Houston Astros, who were a joke. They're not what they are now. They were a joke at the time. He played for another year and then retired. Signed a 1 year max veteran contract type thing. But he had, like, as I said...
Man,
like,
the money in MLB is just frightening, absolutely, if you're, like, a top 10 player, isn't it?
Similar to basketball, they operate with a soft cap as opposed to, like, the hard cap that's in the NFL. So, luxury tax or big spends, mm-hmm, and stuff like that. And, yeah. And at the time, the Mets had won the World Series in 86, I think. And were trying to regain kind of dominance in New York, or trying to overcome the Yankees and Steinbrenner and be the dominant kind of sporting franchise in New York. It's obviously at a time as well where baseball was America's number one sport. So, yeah, look.
Why did they agree to it, though, the Mets?
Because they didn't want the $5.9 million of immediate payout incurred in 1 year against the salary cap. They kind of were gambling on the fact that the salary cap, at that stage it was a hard salary cap. It's since been, I think it was maybe 2004, they changed to a soft cap system. But they were kind of gambling on the fact that because baseball was so popular at the time, that it would continue and the salary cap would explode and what they'd be paying them would be minuscule in terms of, like, against the salary cap.
And they just gambled really, really poorly.
Really poorly. There's also another thing to kind of point out is that the Mets owner at the time lost his job in 2008, effectively was a Ponzi scheme owner, and that obviously all came crumbling down in the fiscal crash of 2008, as some of us may.
But it is a terrible, terrible decision, wasn't it? Like,
absolutely horrific, and he's crucified them until 2035. It's just, it's
he amazing. Must be getting death threats.
Who?
Vanilla.
I think you're vastly overrating the size and intensity of the New York Mets fan base.
Wow. I've never been to a solo baseball game, just on that note.
Sorry?
I've been to baseball games, but I've never seen or been to a sold out game. That's not playoff.
Yeah, but
was the stadium empty when you went to it? Yeah. Like, how did they make the money to pay those ads? The stadiums always look fucking empty.
Because there's 1,000 the games time. A season per side.
Like, is it just because they've 180, like, was 160 games?
Oh, there's something astronomical. And then they even talk about, like, the dog days of summer. It was like no one's paying attention in the summer. Which, it's like your...
Yeah, it's an October sport, isn't it?
Well, that's, yeah,
or
crunch
September.
Time.
It's never that expensive to go either. It's very cheap.
Because there's so many of them. Yeah. It's like, what's the greatest thing about the NFL is that, like, I know it's extended this year, but you've 17 games of a regular season. It's very short. Like,
supply and demand, yeah.
Yeah, it adds this intensity and this urgency, sense of urgency to everything. Like you're ruling... It's mad to believe that we're week 12 from, say, 2 weeks ago, you were chalking off multiple teams.
Like, I like, if I was to move to the States, I like the idea of baseball. It's like that American dream type thing that you go, oh, take me out to, and all that sort of crap. But the reality is, it's actually terrible.
It's a day out, though, isn't it? It's a nice, relaxing day out. Like, you bring, wear the farmer vest, the 8 cans, just sit there for 6 hours. Like,
it's the,
it sounds great.
Yeah, look, it was sold to us as kids as, like,
rounders.
I suppose the dream from 90s action movies, I suppose, was the baseball and, like, movies like The Field of Dreams and stuff.
Yes.
All those cult classics and stuff. But, yeah, no, it's American cricket is how I describe it, to be fair.
Yeah.
It can be a hard watch. A long slog.
Very hard watch, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But look, we digress. We've discussed contracts enough. I'm going to hand you over to the bottom feeder, Atley, as he takes us through championship windows.
This is going to be painful.
Read the question in full.
Just even the open. Yeah.
Can't be as painful.
Exactly
as
how you worded it, yeah.
Oh, can't be as painful like game.
Oh, no, it's,
it is.
It's going to be painful. So, after the season-ending injury to Michael Porter and the potential closing of Denver's championship window, any sport, what side has opened their championship window and what side has closed said window? Now, I'm just going to open up here and admit this, like a man, the Nuggets are fucked. It's ruined my weekend. I've been snappy in work. I haven't been remotely pleasant. The big lad here was trying to say to me the window was still open. I was like, I'm not having that. Like, they're done. Like, they're on three max contracts. Murray's not back. at this stage, I wouldn't even consider bringing him back this year. So just write it off. Porter obviously has a history of back problems. Like, famously, one Clippers medical staff said he would never play an NBA game. Like, tell him to fuck off as well, because he was wrong on that. And then all that's left is Big Joe. He's obviously going to try and carry the side now for the rest of the year. In the Western Conference, I think they are cooked for now, and I would seriously consider reevaluating where that roster is now next summer.
Firstly, obviously, I hope you weren't expecting this to be a PG show. Secondly, and this is where I disagree with you, and this is why I was saying it, Jokic is 26. So the championship window might close for this season, but it's not locked. It's very easy with some intelligent cap movement to, like, come back with a new side. Jokic in 2 years' time. Very easy.
Yeah, but look, they brought Gordon in last, at the trade deadline last year, right? That's when Murray was healthy. And by all accounts, that window was as wide, considering where the Western Conference was last year, that window was as wide open as you were going to get when they were all healthy. Porter was only coming into his own. And just like that, I think it's gone. You got Jokic on a whim with a second round draft pick. That is one in a billion pick. Like, how often are you going to hit on picks like that to change the entire franchise? Like, they're going to have to turn around and decide, like, I don't think Murray's going to be the same player when he gets back.
No. So, but, like,
I don't.
But at 26, there's so much time to reinvent that roster. And then the other thing you've got, which I think a lot of people are overlooking, is the Lakers are a year to 2 years away from a rebuild. Either way you put it, Anthony Davis just ain't that guy. LeBron is old. Westbrook is probably going to move on. Melo's probably going to retire. So that's blowing up 18 months to 24 months time. Potentially sooner if they if they struggle in the playoffs and are one and done or something like that. The Clippers, I don't think there's a lot of time left in that either. I think that whole Kawhi PG experiment, just not going to work. Kawhi was brilliant with the Spurs when he was behind, like, cult figures and, like, natural leaders, a winning culture. You take him outside that culture, let's park Toronto. It was a 1 year, massive injuries across the league that season. I don't think he's that guy. So then you look at the rest of the West. It's Golden State.
You see, I know we always hammer each other over the Dallas thing, right? But Dallas is a very favourable market as well. And they have Luka, right? They do. Like, that's the reality. Like, Denver have Jokic, but it's Denver. Do you know? And it's freezing.
Yeah.
And I know they have multiple sports teams, but, like, see what I'm saying? Is a lot of those teams, the windows may close, but the windows never really close when you're LA. Like, it doesn't.
Yeah, fair. Look,
I'm
fair.
Sorry.
But look.
And the Clippers, I know they're the second best team in LA, and they're always going to be the second best team in LA. But when you're pulling, like, Paul George and Kawhi into a roster, like, you can kind of whim it out of something. Like, Denver don't have the pull like that. So I actually do think it's cooked. I'm going to be sad for the rest of the week.
Okay, well, look, this is not the bottom feeder athlete's smallest violin in the world playing. Coach, who got his window open?
Yeah, so
window open or closed?
Are we going both now?
It's up to you, whatever you want to throw out there.
So I have an open and a closed. I changed my closed from what you guys are expecting. I think I'll kick off with the closed. About 10 days ago, roughly, we found out that Stephen Larkin will be leaving Munster. Munster then continued and progressed to travel to the South Africa, where they were struck down with two cases of new Omicron COVID virus. And today have announced another 8 cases. They're up to a total of 10 cases. Their window is now closed, shut, slammed shut. They're going from bad to worse. And I can't say they don't deserve every bit of it. I was hoping the start of the season was going to be a change.
And I love the unbiased journalism here. from it.
No, look, look, I wanted to give Munster every... I was going to be a fan this year. I was going to go to the games. I was going to travel down. I was thinking, do you know what? COVID got the best of us. I'm going to go down here. I'm going to buy, not a season ticket, but maybe all the home Champions Cup games. I've got a group of friends that travel to every game. They get sandwiches off their grandmother on the way down, and they go to Thomond and they enjoy the day. A couple of pints, one designated driver, and come home. And I was going to be part of that. I was buying in. I was all for it. And then they just take the absolute mick. It started with Zeebo. He comes back. Oh, look, it's going to be great. And... fantastic, yeah, it is, it's gonna be great. But then they mess everything up, like, it's done. They let their best players go to AIL and playing with Leinster clubs. They've, you know, they've lost players. They just don't know what they're doing. They're the definition of you don't know what you're doing, and like, they're all over the shop. I don't know what's next for Munster. I don't know who's gonna go into Munster. I don't know, like, who do you get in to steady the ship? Number one. And number two, when are you getting home? Because their Champions Cup boys are out.
Well, their academy's playing against Wasps. That's already been announced. But I do think that's up there with your greatest overreaction ever. I think Munster are fine, will be fine. I think still they've got a ways to go to catch Leinster. Ulster may have kind of maybe usurped them for this season. But they have a lot of young talent coming through. They've potentially their scrum half... sword for the next decade.
But we've heard this all before. They have a lot of young talent. Every year, young talent. Where does young talent end up? Leinster? Or AIL playing for Terenure, Clontarf, Lansdowne?
Oh, good lord.
South Dublin teams.
Didn't know if you're aware of this, Bottom Feeder Atlee, but rugby doesn't exist outside the M50 and it doesn't exist north of the Liffey. It's a single... if you haven't got an even postcode, you can't play the game. Why don't you get on to that Munster group of friends and maybe suggest going to Galway? Going there. It's 2 hours. Quicker journey.
It is.
But yeah, no, I think that's a classic overreaction. And our reference, the championship window of what? Of the URC, of the Champions Cup?
Oh, I think they're done. They're both. They're done. They're finished.
For this year?
For this year. I don't see them coming back from this.
God, say maybe, forever.
Yeah. No, for this season, I don't see them coming back for this. And if they don't make a very, very good choice in the coaching staff next season, we could be seeing the depths of despair here.
Okay.
I don't know where you go. You get O'Gara. Everyone will want O'Gara, right? He's gonna be the one that's touted. I don't think he'd want it. I think he knows himself how bad they are. I don't think O'Gara comes home.
His next gig is definitely an international gig, though.
I don't think...
He's 100%.
If it's not Leinster...
He's not taking a club job again.
If it's
again.
Not Ireland or Leinster, O'Gara's not coming home. And he's pretty much... I don't know if you listened to the interview on Off the Wall he did about 2 months ago, where he actually stated that he wouldn't be against managing or coaching Leinster.
Yeah, fair enough. Look, I could say and debate that all day, but I think I don't need to.
Do you not think his sights are a bit higher? I think his sights are higher. All Blacks.
I think O'Gara is far more likely to go managing the Gaelic Premiership than he is to go managing Ireland. I think he enjoys the different cultural experiences he's had. I think he enjoyed his time in New Zealand. I think he's loving his time in France.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he knows what Munster is. He knows what the Irish setup is. To be fair, like, I know it's changed. I know it's been brought forward, but he knows the essence of it. I would say he's in regular communication with Paul O'Connell, not just on a what's going on, how's work, but just as long-term friends would in a group chat because they played together for so long.
But who do you think's out there that they can go to next?
Munster.
Yeah, like, we know Larkin's leaving, so who do you think?
I think Pat Lamb probably isn't much longer left for Bristol. I think he might be looking for a move.
Conor O'Shea?
No, Conor O'Shea's... No. No, not a fan.
What's your man's name? The old fullback for Ireland. Is that Leicester?
Jordy
Murphy.
I think he's... Well, he's... Like, he played his whole career at Leicester. I think he just loves... Leicester culture. Like,
loves the Queen.
Do you know what
I mean?
him and Vardy on the piss together.
Yeah, him and Vardy. Yeah. On the Queen's coin.
Yeah, he's from Kildare as well. Like, I wouldn't like to see anyone from Kildare come back once we got rid of him.
Yeah, look, I just think they need to make... I need to think they make a real astute, you know... I need, yeah, they need someone. They'll probably look at the likes of Graham Rowntree or someone like that and just put them in, will they though?
No, don't. Anyway, who's the championship window opening?
Oh,
because you're upsetting me.
Who is it opening for? Manchester United. Ralph Ragnick. That man is phenomenal. Now, I've seen people over the last 48 hours going ballistic because I don't know. There's a place called a memberships like platform, I suppose, for football coaches that I'd be members myself. It's called The Coach's Voice, and they do kind of talks, all these different coaches and stuff like that. And Ragnick, I don't know how long ago, it's probably, you can view it any time, but it was probably in the last, probably maybe 2 years ago at this point, did a talk and about how, remember, I don't know if you remember Klopp saying heavy metal football and the pressing game and all sort of stuff. And he was basically commenting on how good they were at it, and that you might have seen the quote about being, you can't just press a little bit, it's like being a little bit pregnant. Yeah, you either do it or you don't, pregnant or not. So he was just basically a Sadio Mane, Mo Salah, and he actually signed Bobby Firmino. It was one of his last signings at Hoffenheim. But the things that man has done at the Red Bull organization for all the clubs, not just Leipzig, but for all of them,
and look at
putting it down, I think we mentioned it the other day, but I think this is incredible for Manchester United. But now the only thing
is, it's not what he does in 6 months, it's what he does over the next 3 years is what I will be taking from.
Exactly. I think people are forgetting that the term of the 6 months, and then he's into a 2 year deal, isn't he? Like, so I think people are, he will assign that manager, I'm sure he will be the one to pick that manager after 6 months. And the one thing that really bugs me, and I know it bugs Roy Keane on Sky Sports, is how that staff are still there and getting away with it is a scandal. It's an absolute farce.
It is a scandal.
But I think that's why they've brought this fella in. They've brought him in from the outside. He has no biases. He has no, he knows what Man United is. Obviously, he's not stupid, but he's no loyalty to Ferguson and the Busby Babes. And I think that's probably the problem with United. I've touched on this before. Like, you served your time. You did the club admirably. It was a golden time for this club, whatever. But thank you and good luck. The Boston Celtics don't consult with Larry Bird when they're making a signing. Like, do you know what I mean? It has to be.
It's a little bit like, yeah, look, they're almost better with Ferguson dying, aren't they? Like, that's the best case scenario for Man United.
Ah, lad.
Jesus Christ.
He's got the stand name there from him. Jesus Christ. Get the next one now. Like,
it was interesting though to see Graeme Souness say it was a great retirement piece. I always love when Graeme Souness calls out a manager, bearing in mind this is the gentleman we're talking about who signed Ali Dia, George Weah's magical cousin that wasn't his cousin. It was a great one for you. Do you remember that? No?
Yeah.
Great story.
Look, I just think it's definitely open for them. Like, they could turn. Could they turn this around? I'm not convinced they have the right players in the squad with Ragnick now to turn everything around to get, say, Champions League. Not convinced. I don't think Ronaldo will fit what he's looking for. I get everyone's going to go mad. Oh, Ronaldo, he scored so many games, goals to change games a season. Not disputing that. But he scored it in a system that isn't Ragnick's system. So I think he's better off with your fitter players, your young guns, and working on them, because they're the ones you're going to have for the next 3 or 4 years.
But I think
he's going to give Ronnie a little bit of leeway though, isn't he? Like, you can't imagine him not giving Ronaldo just a smidge.
Where I think,
like, just press the two centre halves and don't do anything else. Good. Do you know?
Go on, Sass.
But where I think Ronaldo could be crucial now is Ragnick obviously is going to have to bring in a new culture.
Mm-hmm.
Who's a great culture setter? A man who's arguably where he is because of work rate.
Yeah, but how do you stop him becoming, a terrorist? Like, he's got a lot of power, but where's his interest? Is his interest in the club, or is his? Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
I get what you're saying, but no, I just think it's it could go one or two ways. I suppose it could be the easy way to say it.
Does he end up playing that false nine role and letting the two wider men press? Liverpool-esque, to be fair.
Do you not think the amount of easy goal opportunities he's going to get is going to go up if they win the ball higher up the pitch now? I'm not saying, like, everyone's obsessed with the press now all of a sudden, because that's all the talk and all the rage the last few days. Is that, like,
a few years, to be fair.
Everyone presses. Do you know what I mean? And like,
I just think the players they've got,
if they win the ball higher up the pitch, is he not going to have more chances to score? Is he not going to get better chances?
Yeah, in
to score
theory he should, but will he be on the pitch? Like, how do you do that press with him on the pitch?
Of course he's going to be on the pitch.
I don't know. I just think United are going to stay a little bit pregnant. That's the problem.
Okay.
So, I've definitely got in trouble for lesser things said than that now.
Yeah. Terrorist, pregnant, and wishing death on a former great manager. Look. Moving on, I suppose what I would say is, right, actually, I actually was, and I was like, do you know what? I'm not going to get him into it because there'll be war to pay in life when we were living. I was actually going to say, aside that the championship window could potentially be closing, was Liverpool. Mainly because of the African Cup of Nations.
But
I've looked at the fixtures, and do you know what? I think you might just get out of it all right. You play Chelsea, probably the last fixture before they head off. And then I think it's like Leicester's the hardest fixture. But I think it should be fine. But then I was also kind of Fenway Sports Group and kind of their policy, and just I think and I might want to be correct on this, Van Dijk, Mane and Salah are all up for contract renewal in the next 24 months and they're all 29 or 30. Do I see Fenway Sports Group making a potentially bad move when it comes to those three players, potentially? So that's why I was going to give them an honorable mention. But look, championship window opening, Chicago Bulls. They've been magical. Do I think they're going to win it this year? Probably not. But I think there's scope for a longer opening window here, and they could be a serious challenger in the East, definitely. So you never know what can happen there. I think they're probably more set up to win than, say, the Milwaukee Bucks, who are probably over-reliant on Giannis. Outside of that...
I'd like to argue that...
Go on, forward.
I agree with you about the Bulls, but it's a two-year thing. That's it. That's all I see them. Like, it's this year, next year, or it's back to, like, mediocrity. I just think with the way the East is kind of going now, it's like, if they can really get a very high seed and to get the Nets without Kyrie and all of the favourable things that the pandemic has given, you know, the middling NBA teams over the last couple of years, chances to get to places that they never had a hope of getting to. They're firmly in that bunch of teams that could do it in a 2-year window, but after that, done. Not happening.
But
do you not think
the core of the roster outside of DeMar DeRozan is very young?
Like Vucevic as well, but
and DeMar DeRozan is not old in that either. Like, he's not NBA old.
No, I know. The same could be said then for the three lads that you run about Fenway re-signing, about getting a little bit older now as well. Is that these boys are all kind of extending their primes into their early 30s now instead of their late 20s, which is fair.
Yeah, no, and I agree with that. I just think my concern is not on the three players mentioned. It's on Fenway Sports Group and the tight purse strings that they run their organisations and their money ball influence. So would they be... I just see a situation where they feel they make a snap decision on one of those players, particularly if they have a substandard year next year, say, for example, final year of a contract. It's a different situation because of... I just think Fenway Sports Group kind of complicates that. And that's why I was giving a subtle mention to Liverpool, but I decided in the end not to.
I don't think the Bulls are that competent up top either, you know, like, organisation-wise. Like, they haven't really been for a long time. Like,
they'll
find
a
way to ruin this.
They never
like
were. If you watch the last
like
dance,
they were carried by the greatest basketball player of all time, and then they rode the coattails of a generational talent before he blew his knee out as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, so I can't see them. I think it's a 2-year thing, and it's a 2-year thing because of the circumstances that the sporting world find itself in now and the uncertainty that comes with it.
Okay, fair enough. I'll agree to disagree with you on that one, but it could go one of either ways. And then the other one I just wanted to bring up as championship window closing, I think definitely for this season, we'll be very happy to prove them wrong, will be the LA Rams. They've invested too much in late season free agency. So Von Miller, Odell obviously as well as touched upon, on top of already bringing in a heap of talent last year. I think the loss of Robert Woods has made them have to play a different style of game, especially to fit in Odell. I'm starting to believe that for all the talent in the world, all the toughness in the world, Matthew Stafford isn't that guy. He just hasn't got the grey matter. He hasn't got where it matters the most. And I know you're going to be very hot for that comment, but I do believe three picks in Green Bay. Where's the game management there? Where's the, you know, where's the leader in that? Can't see if he's squinting because we froze or if he's...
But the Bulls have a better chance than the Rams of winning a championship.
This year?
In this year period. Now I'm trying my best not to swear here because... Because
you got telling off last time.
I'm gonna be shot. Like, I'm boiling red here. Like, no. Like, the Rams window isn't that big. It's not closed, though.
I
still think they can win it this year. No one is good this year.
No one is good this year, but they're not. No they're one not is good finish, this year. They're not going to finish top of the West. So they're likely going to be
the NFC West.
The NFC West, yeah.
They're finishing top of the NFC West. Like, fucking Kyler's been gone for... I don't know where he is. No one knows where Kyler is. The MLA. What, Jimmy Garoppolo is going to beat the Rams out to the NFC West for? Stop. You're having me on now. I've had enough. Don't be doing this to me.
Yeah, but the Cardinals have a two-game lead on them already.
They're getting that back.
Oh, are they? I don't see it.
They're getting it back.
The 49ers also are on a streak, back. Aren't they? Three or four games?
You just don't trust them, though, like... I can't trust them at any capacity.
But looking at the fixtures right for the Rams, right? Jacksonville Jaguars the weekend. That's an ultimate get right game right now. Then they go play the Arizona Cardinals, who will have Kyler Murray, DeAndre Hopkins back. Then obviously they'll walk over Seattle, who are an absolute mess now. They then go to Minnesota in a side that's battling hard to qualify and has offensive talent, let's be honest. And then they round it out with a trip to Baltimore. Difficult. And they're at home against the 49ers. That's not a nice run.
I love the way they built.
It's not a nice run.
What do you think they finish?
I think they finish 10-7? Sixth. In the NFC.
Sixth seed.
Yeah. And I think they'll have to go back to Lambeau. I think they'll have to go back to Lambeau in January. And I think... you'll find they've lost the last two visits to Lambeau.
I can't believe you said that about Matt Stafford.
I'm visibly hurt. Prove me wrong. What's he done? What are you doing in Detroit? How long are you in Detroit? He'd arguably be the greatest receiver ever. Arguably. I know it's a dysfunctional organization, but what did he do? And how many playoff wins do you have in Detroit?
He's still firmly in the MVP running this year. Like, that's
he's
it.
Not
like,
anymore.
He could still
he's
win
gone.
It.
Gone. Absolutely gone.
He could still win it. Like, none of them can be trusted at the moment, in fairness. Not when Lamar is throwing four picks. I mean, like, what's the argument there?
Do you know how many...
Like, Josh Allen and Herbert, like, fucking... get me going. Like, he's still, like... As much as you're saying, like, he doesn't have the moxie. Like, he could turn around and win an MVP this year.
He won't.
You don't know that.
I do. Anyway, you'd given us a side that's window was closing, I think, in Denver. Any other sides, window open, window closing?
I'm looking at the time here. I'm going to do one more, but it is a window closing and not a window open.
Okay.
And it is the Boston Celtics.
Fair.
So I'll ask you a quick question. Where do you see Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown as players, like, right now in the league? Where would you rank them? Like, I know where I have them. I want to see where you have them first.
Are you saying as in a, are you saying you're looking for a number, or are you saying like as in they're both all stars? Not that that really means much anymore.
No. Give me a ranking. Like I don't want the individual rankings. Like I'll take like are they both top 20 players? I'll settle for that. If we don't want to be too deep.
They're just outside, but they're only the top 20 players. Based on the season,
I think they're top 20 players.
If they're all stars, they have to be top 20 players, though.
That's not necessarily true.
It's not necessarily, but by analytics wise, you would
this
say.
This season.
They're not top 20 players.
Right, I think talent wise, that they are top 20 players. I think they're top 20 players between them. Like, anywhere between 10 and 20, you could put both of those lads in there.
Yeah, but how heavy is a bag of spanners? And I think
Yeah, but I don't like for you to have two of the top 20 players in the league and not be winning games and not like they just seem really dysfunctional. Like, I don't know what Danny Ainge did with all of these picks, and Brad Stevens moved into that GM job last year, but it just doesn't seem like it's going to kick on for them. I don't get the feeling that they can kick on and start winning titles. Like, Tatum is going to be the 10th best player in the league, and that might all he ever amounts to. Like, you just don't ever see him going to push this on to be a proper MVP contender.
Well, I personally think that there's one winner in that they're probably going to trade one of them. I don't think they work together. I think they need someone else. I think they probably trade Jaylen Brown, and they probably bring in two lesser superstars.
It's the modern NBA, and it's thriving on big wing players. Like, how can you not make this work with two
coaching
really good wing players? Like, it doesn't make sense.
Coaching.
Do you know what I mean?
Look, we've rambled on too much, but I think this segment's about 30 minutes.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
But, yeah, look, coach.
Yes, sir.
Like a scorned lover. Let's go.
So, today the Ballon d'Or for 2021 was announced. The winners were announced, obviously, voted by various journalists, but mostly it's the coaches, or managers, and captains of national teams. And I think they should all be ashamed of themselves. Because I think it's an absolute farce and a scandal. We may as well call out the top 10. Starting with number 1, as it's Messi. Number 2, Robert Lewandowski, or the body, as some people like to refer to him as. Jorginho at number 3. Karim Benzema, number 4. N'Golo Kante, number 5. Cristiano Ronaldo, number 6. Number 7, Mohamed Salah. Kevin De Bruyne at number 8. Number 9, Kylian Mbappe. And number 10, Gianluigi Donnarumma. Now, I don't know, but we know the Ballon d'Or has always been heavily biased towards attacking players, which I think everyone's fine with. I think everyone's fine with that. But this is a travesty. So to kick this off, I just want to know your thoughts and what you think even top 5 should have been. Is there anyone you want to kick out of that top 10? Is there anyone you'd keep in the top 10? Yeah. Would you rearrange? Because
there's one obvious one. One for me anyway. I think Jorginho is criminally overrated. I know he won a Champions League. I know he won a European Championship within a month of each other.
Super cool.
But I just wonder, like, especially like after that clanger against United, like, I don't if you were to tell me he's the third best player in the world, I don't think that sits necessarily right with me.
I agree.
I'd argue more important lately in the Europeans was Donnarumma. He guys thought he was phenomenal in the Euros. Like,
but Jorginho and Kante should almost be in as one person.
I think Jorginho has robbed Kante of the proper limelight, to be honest with you. Like, Kante, how many Man of the Match awards did he win on that run up to the Champions League final? Like, honest to God.
But should it not become more like, you know, the NBA or a different type of an award that they win? Not the Ballon d'Or. Maybe it's, you know, I don't know, the Brian Robson Hardman Award or something. I don't know what it's called. But
if they didn't give it to the body, they should have given it to Kante. Like, there shouldn't have been an argument against it.
I
don't understand. Like, why is Messi?
Well, you see, and this,
do you know, all we know is Ronaldo and Messi. Like,
but this,
come on, give us something different.
There's a problem with the award, and let's call a spade a spade. It's always going to get this reaction because there's inevitably a bit of recency bias. It's an annual award. It's not run on a season, and probably should be run in a season. It probably should be done in September, or maybe even August. Whereas, like, a lot of people are hurt by the fact that Ronaldo finished above Salah. And even if you include the full year, you can make arguments that Salah should have finished above Ronaldo. But you're always going to have this where they probably put a greater weighting on the end of the previous season than they do on the start of this season. Which, if it's a 12-month award, you have to count each month equally or value them equally. But I do think it should be a season award. Like, Lewandowski deserves a hand down.
Yeah.
Because he was robbed last year and he started in a similar vein this year.
Yeah. No, I agree.
38 goals in 30 games, was it? 38 goals in
38? Something astronomical.
Ridiculous.
But, like, we're rewarding Messi for being a greedy bastard. And, you know, as someone commented to me, if he was a Christian, or sorry, if Mo Salah was a Christian with tax fraudulent issues, he probably would have won it. But, and I have no issue with Mo Salah not winning it, because I think when you think back to 2021, he's having an astounding season this year. Liverpool weren't great last year.
They weren't. He still nipped in with 25 goals.
Yeah, no, he did. And the other thing I think is a problem is, I think some of the leagues, Spain in particular, is criminally overrated. It's
absolutely
it's really, really poor standard. I don't know if you've ever gone to a league game. It's very, the standard's not great. Like,
but then you wonder, did they relate it to Champions League? Well, I can't even say Champions League success. Well, I'll be honest, and I'm not just saying this now. I thought when Argentina won Copa, I was like, well, Messi's winning Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, there is that.
Especially
that was probably the straw on the camel's back, like, that got
great,
it.
Like, what is the logic behind the voting process? Like, you can understand it more clearly
personal
with other
opinion.
Sports. How?
Yeah.
Personally,
is it just like do they weigh it against, like, if you were to stress test the voting process for the Ballon d'Or, what does it actually look like? I think it's a pile of, you know,
it's storylines, and the storyline was, Messi finally won a major international tournament 6 months after the passing of arguably Argentina's greatest footballer.
What did Ronaldo do in 2021 that he deserves to be in the top 10?
I wouldn't argue against him.
He's almost single-handedly ruined Juventus. Almost. Financially crippled them.
I think Angelini's to blame for that.
Yeah, but that's not his fault. Like, they gave him the money.
No, I get that, but what did he win for them? What did he do for him? He did nothing in 2021 for him. Nothing. But yet, Stephen Kenny is there itching his neck, voting for him probably.
Well, you can argue that if you're going to take anyone from Italy, it probably should have been Romelu Lukaku last year.
Yeah.
Especially what he did for Belgium in the Euros. Well, he was decent for Belgium in the Euros. And I know he's kind of hit a bit of injury misfortune, but he had kind of hit the ground running for Chelsea as well. So.
And now he's not even got a mention.
So, look, you know, it's strange. It's very, look, given how corrupt football is, especially at that high level, you wonder how much of it is back rubs and.
Yeah. So, look, I think what we'll do is, right, we'll rest on that. We admit that it's wrong. I've got two questions for you that have a bit of weight in them before we finish up. Question number one, what is the last time or the last year, if you put a number, that the Ballon d'Or was worth its weight in salt? I'm going to stick my neck out on a line here and just go 2006. It was third place Thierry Henry, second place Buffon, and first place Fabio Cannavaro. I know.
2008.
So you're going.
Is it Kaka? 2012?
No, Kaka was 2007. Yeah. 2007 with Ronaldo. 2007.
I thought
second,
he was,
Messi
he
third.
Was from that year.
So, but that was a good Phenomenal. Competitive year. And then it, we broke into the Messi Ronaldo, you know, whatever on it. Bigger such and such contest. But go on, bottom feeder, what were you thinking?
I think it's 2012 is the year I'm thinking of, where Messi had was it the most amount of goals he's ever had in a calendar year?
Yeah, he got 41% of the vote that year. Third place Iniesta. So that the dominance of Barca that year was probably coming up to their
Yeah.
I tell you one, the one standout year for me was actually 2005, because Ronaldinho won it, Lampard in second and Gerrard in third. If you remember, that was 2005, obviously Liverpool in the Champions League, but the games between Liverpool and Chelsea that year, and then Ronaldinho was, that was probably his last little sprinkling of magic on the game, his last peak year. The year
I think he was pretty good in that Brazilian prison, mate.
Yeah, but the toe poke goal against Chelsea into the top bins, remember, with very little backlift on it, it was just different class.
Yeah.
So to finish us off, can you give me your top five Ballon d'Or winners ever? Start from five. We won't do the honourable mention for Michael Owen, even though he was top notch.
But look, Ronaldo and Messi are going to have to get it anyway.
Yeah, Ronaldo and Messi are in there. Like, if you're going to people that won the most and you're going with the top five, but it's probably Ronaldo, Messi,
Fat Ronaldo for me, to be honest.
I'm trying to
not even skinny Ronaldo, I'm going Fat Ronaldo.
How many times did he win it though? I'm trying to think who's won it the most.
He won it twice, and he won FIFA World Player of the Year three times.
Messi, Ronaldo, Michel Platini, Johan Cruyff, no. And Van Basten, but I don't think they do it these days. Would they? Oh, Fat Ronaldo's in there for me too.
Ah, Fat Ronaldo, like, we could do a whole pod on him someday.
Look, I don't care how many times he's actually won it, but I do think Jordy Cruyff probably, or Johan Cruyff probably, not
yeah,
Jordy
no,
Cruyff.
Definitely Jordy would be lucky to win the Rotten Tomato.
He'd be looking to win the Lotto.
Council Estate, Johan Cruyff incoming.
Yeah.
Jordy Cruyff.
Yeah, no, I'd probably go Cruyff. Ronaldo, Messi, that's three. Two Ronaldos. And then it's very, like, if you're just going on a year, the year Rivaldo won it, I think he was next in unplayable. I'm going back to like 2001, probably even before that, probably late 90s. He was unstoppable for maybe 2 years, and I know it's only 1 year, it doesn't define a career, because he definitely fell off a cliff after it.
Who, Rivaldo?
Rivaldo.
Did he win it?
He won it in, let me have the list up here.
I'm not having that.
He was phenomenal that year though. Do you know what I mean? If you're looking at like a single season, that's like, it almost doesn't matter how many times Messi Ronaldo won it. It's like, who's the best ever Ballon d'Or winner?
That was, yeah.
That's so hard.
Yeah.
And look, maybe someone like Franz Beckenbauer as well, to really round it out.
Yeah, like Kevin Keegan winning it, he was kind of, yeah.
That was the year he won in Hamburg, wasn't he? Won the European Cup, I'd say. Georgie Best, 1968.
He probably drank his way to it as well. Like,
I think he was a good footballer.
I almost think Messi's and Ronaldo should be broken into the clubs they're at, though. Like, they could win it. You know the way you could say, okay, Ronaldo of whatever year at Madrid, you know, 2013, 2014, whatever. Because he's almost been two different types of player.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, you can also look at the voting and kind of see who won it by an absolute landslide. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, it's a difficult one. So, two Ronaldos, Messi.
I think, I think actually, I think just Cruyff. On the year he had, you mentioned Rivaldo, but Kaká at that time as well.
Yeah.
He didn't peak for long. He didn't peak for long, but my God.
But AC Milan were phenomenal during that spell as well.
Yeah. That's me, boys.
Yeah, right. It's a shame Bergkamp only ever finished second, because it always...
Is there anyone...
There's a lot of really good players here that...
Is there anyone you'd pick out and just go, do you know what, if you were to give them a... You know, they've never, you know, really got the nod, but you'd go, yeah, I'd give him one.
Roberto Carlos.
I was going to say Robbie Fowler.
I was going to say Dennis Bergkamp.
I only think I just want to see a reaction.
How did you go from Roberto Carlos to Robbie Fowler?
No.
Honestly, it's the nasal strips for me.
Yeah, no. Fernando Torres definitely.
Like prime Liverpool, obviously.
He won a title win
at Chelsea.
Yeah, where he didn't play and became a bodybuilder.
Yeah, he's jacked now. Did you see the size of him on the Atletico sidelines? Fucking hell.
Anyway.
The body.
Come on, Sasquatch, I'm getting hungry here.
Was there another question? No, there was no other question on the Ballon d'Or.
No, just Fernando Torres should have got one.
Yeah, Dennis Bergkamp for me. Right. This week's Have You Seen This? It's a bit of a strange one, but look, we're going to go with it anyway. So, it's more reference to a bet. So, last night, recording on Tuesday, Monday Night Football, probably one of the worst Monday Night Football games you see all season, Washington football team versus Seattle Seahawks. A better had a bet on the halftime score to be a tie and Gerald Everett to score a touchdown. Tight end for Seattle Seahawks. It's American odds, so I'm not great at these, but he bet $10 and he won $1,510. Why it was immense was with 56 seconds left to go in the second quarter, Washington had scored a touchdown. We're going for the playoff touchdown to take the lead from 9-7 to 10-7. The kick of goal was blocked and Seattle ran it back for a 2-point playoff touchdown, and the tied score at 9-all at halftime. So it was an incredible bet, and it probably was the longest run that winner's ever watched in his life. So I just thought it was worth mentioning. But look,
can I give an honorable mention? I don't know if anyone's seen last night was James McLean and the Free Derry tattoo. Has anyone seen that? Oh my, little Marilyn Monroe pose and the giving the L.
No.
Oh, look it up.
He loves it.
Quality.
Look, I suppose just a quick little bit around the houses. We'll be back again Friday morning, Thursday evening with our picks for the weekend. The coach will be issuing a full 3-page apology for his recommendations on a tipple last weekend. Glad I didn't follow that one in. Look, as always, fan questions, click the link in the description. We've also got affiliate partnerships there with USA Sports. Get your Christmas shopping done. The Athletic, read the best coverage in the game. And look, that's all from me.
That's all from me.
We're really going to have to cut out these dramatic pauses. thank you and good night.
Good night.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.